From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 29th day of January 2019. I'm Todd Gleason, coming to you from the Pork Expo in Springfield, Illinois today. In just a few minutes, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Brian Basting of Advanced Trading out of Bloomington, Illinois. Wayne Nelson is on the road and not available to me this afternoon, but Brian's here at the Pork Expo. And then a bit later in the program, we'll hear some really intriguing things from the pork producers as it relates to advertising. You probably recall Pork the Other White Meat. That's one of the most successful advertising campaigns in history. Well, the pork producers are at it again, and this time they're using Google. You'll want to hear what they're up to, and I bet you'll see it in some of your social media feeds potentially. So pay attention to that as we make our way through this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here's the way the numbers settled in Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon. March corn for the day down 2.5 cents, finished at 377 at a quarter. May at 386, 2.25 lower, and July corn at 393 3/4, down 2.5 cents for the afternoon. September at 396 1/4, 2.25 lower, and December at 401, that finished 2 cents lower on the day. Soybean futures in the March contract down 4.25 at $9.19. The May at 932 3/4, 4.25 lower, and July down 4.5 cents at 945 1/4. August at 950 1/4, 4.25 lower, and November beans at 958, down 4.25 cents. Soft red winter wheat 5.5 lower at 513 1/4. And the lead March July 525, down 6 1/4, and the bean oil futures finished 19 cents lower on the afternoon at $30.11. Bean meal at 311.80. Down 40 cents for the day. Livestock futures, live cattle, February contract, 7.5 cents higher, $126.47 the settlement price. April at 127.80, up 42.5. January feeder cattle at 142.65, down 82.5 cents. The March down a dime at 144.25 for the afternoon. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. We're coming to you from the Illinois Pork Expo today, and that reminds me that lean hogs settled 65 cents lower at $57.32. The April there at $62.55, up 22.5 cents. Hey, speaking of things that are coming up, like the Pork Expo, we're talking about the All-Day Ag Outlook. That's Tuesday, the 5th day of March at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Tickets on sale at willag.org. Here's what some of the other markets are trading like at this hour. Crude oil for the day, $1.21 higher at $53.20 a barrel. Ethanol futures, 0.4 cents lower at $1.26 7/10 per gallon. Heating oil or diesel fuel, 0.6 cents higher at $1.89 4/10, and gasoline on the RBOB. The wholesale price, 0.6 cents higher, $1.34 9/10 per gallon. Natural gas at $2.93 1/2, up 2 4/10. Dow Jones Industrial Average around 63 points higher at 24,536. The U.S. dollar at 95.46 is up 0.036 for the afternoon. The S&P 500, 3.75 points lower at 26.38 1/4. And the gold futures at $1,310.50, up $7.40 on the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area as it comes from the National Weather Service for this evening. And indeed, it will be a very, very cold night. As we look forward into the night, we'll have lows into that 4 degree below zero level, and they'll continue to drop overnight, dropping down to about negative 16. And then tomorrow, just a 4 below for the high. There'll be some winds, and those will be the biggest problem for tomorrow, so be very, very careful outside as you travel. I will be traveling as well, and we'll try to be careful there as well, because those winds in the negative 37 degree area, and that can be really devastating. You can only take about 10 minutes outside in this kind of weather before you might have frostbite on exposed skin. So be very careful over the next couple of days. It will be really, really cold. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Support comes from the Champaign Farmers Market, downtown at Neal and Main Street. Every Tuesday from 3:30 to 6:30 p.m., the Champaign Market gives you the chance to load up on fresh, local vegetables, fruit, baked goods, and more. Double SNAP benefits are available. Information at thelandconnection.org.
Well, we're here at the Pork Expo in Springfield, and Brian Basting from Advanced Trading joins us. He was on stage a bit earlier in the day, along with Chip Nellinger and Alan Brugler, and Tyne Morgan from U.S. Farm Report. You can expect to see them over the weekend, and you can watch for them. So good show there. I'm sure they'll be posted to the website earlier than that, too. Talking to the pork producers, but Brian, I want to talk a little bit about soybeans and where we're headed at this point. We're still in the midst of some real problems. We have some issues with China and Huawei at the moment, and the things are really spinning, I won't say out of control, but there's just an awful lot of balls in the air as it relates to trade.
There really is, Todd. I think that obviously the talks this week hopefully will be productive. I'm not sure we'd expect a complete resolution of the U.S.-China trade issue this week, but hopefully constructive news comes out of that. Resumption of the export sales reporting, how many bushels we did sell to China, how that's coming along there. But yeah, certainly is something that's thrown a big monkey wrench into things, if you will, all the way since last spring. So I don't think it's going to be resolved anytime real soon, but I think there's some constructive signs. Hopefully it can come out of this meeting.
We know that the USDA reports a week from Friday will include the crop production numbers, the final set for the year, along with the grain stocks numbers and the wheat seedings report. Have we heard about when those USDA reports related to exports will come out?
My understanding is that we will get a report this Thursday, January 31st. Now, I don't know if that will just be for the latest week or if they'll start to go back and do previous weeks. But I do believe that the USDA indicated they are going to resume their export sales reporting on a weekly basis this week, and they've already resumed their daily reporting of export sales. So they are looking to resume those right away.
What should producers with old crop, both corn and soybeans, be thinking about at this time?
Really and strongly encourage old crop corn. A lot of producers, from what we picked up on our winter meetings, are holding old crop corn. Strongly encourage those producers to get a floor underneath the market. Doesn't mean they have to go out and sell everything, but if you do make some sales with a favorable basis, get a call option bought to tag on to that. Obviously, we're just getting the Safrinha corn planted in Brazil. So leave yourself that upside flexibility in the market. But get control over those bushels, because it's such a high percentage. We're really concerned that if we were to get some bearish numbers at some point, either from South America or the U.S. here, that there's some vulnerability to the downside.
Is there more risk in the soybeans for the old crop in that case?
For the old crop beans, we really get a strong feeling thus far that a lot of those beans have been sold. However, not all of them have. So if you're holding old crop beans, the same thing applies, perhaps even more so, with the carryout for beans projected at 1 billion bushels or maybe even higher, depending on what happens with China. Get control over those bushels. You've got that MFP payment in your pocket, hopefully. Now you can get a complete floor by selling those beans, either with a put option or with a cash sale and a call option purchase.
Looking forward into the 2019 growing season, Scott Irwin, I think, tweeted earlier today that 75 million acres was about all we really needed for soybeans to make that happen. Certainly, there'll be more than that this year by the time we get to the acreage report.
It's a great point, because we've seen that November contract now rebound up to 950 a bushel. And so we're really encouraging growers, if you think about planting beans for 2019, to be looking at that, because one can certainly build a case where that would look quite favorable this fall under normal conditions with the growing season in South America, the finish, and also a normal growing season here in the U.S. So, no, we're not running out of soybeans. Obviously, a lot can happen. You still want to give yourself some flexibility there. You can tack a call option purchase onto it or some type of option strategy there. But I think the bean market does have risk long-term, significant risk to the downside.
Are there any things that you're looking forward to out of this USDA set of reports on February 8th? What are the numbers that you're looking most forward to seeing? And what are the things that you fear most?
I think the stocks report is always a sleeper, particularly for corn. It gives us an idea what that September, October, November feed residual usage was. I think our bias is that the crop is going to get a little smaller for both corn and beans from what it was back in November, last time a survey was taken. The biggest concern I would have would be that the market gets some favorable numbers and it's already built into the market, this rally we've seen in soybeans, for example, and we get a negative reaction, and this will be it. This will be kind of the end of the road, because that's certainly a possibility given the overall fundamentals.
Any final word that you want to pass on to the listeners?
Strongly encourage your listeners, Todd, to be proactive in their marketing. Defend their balance sheets. Use the tools available to defend the market. These markets are unpredictable. They can surprise us at any turn here. There's a lot of moving pieces with China, with South America. But always be proactive, and remember in your back of your mind, you always want to defend your balance sheet. Give yourself flexibility if the market does rally.
Thanks so much.
You bet.
Brian Basting is with Advanced Trading. He's out of Bloomington, Illinois. Hey, don't forget to pick up your tickets for the All Day Ag Outlook. They're on sale up on the website right now. You can do that at willag.org. The cost is just $30. We'll be at the Beef House on Tuesday, March the 5th. That's the first Tuesday of the month.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, supporting the next generation of farmers with the Fresh Roots Young and Beginning Farmer Program for a healthy start in their farming careers.
Well, today, you know, I traveled to the Pork Expo in Springfield, Illinois, and Bill Even is here. He's the Chief Executive Officer of the National Pork Board and out of St. Clive, Iowa. Bill, thanks for being with us. You had some interesting messages for the pork producers today. I want to start with the last message that you gave them in your presentation at their annual meeting this morning. You were talking about advertising and what the checkoff has done over the years. Now, most of our listeners will be at least familiar with a couple of things. Pork the Other White Meat, one of the most successful advertising campaigns in history, and is taught to journalism school graduates all of the time. I believe it's number one. Coca-Cola as a logo is another thing. So it really is one of those things that set the bar really high. You've moved away from that kind of advertising, and you were talking to them about Google, the search engine, and some of the things that the board has been doing in the last year. Just an amazing look at the way to reach into the consumer. Can you tell me about how this started and what you've been up to?
Absolutely, it's a pleasure. And so what the pork checkoff represents 60,000 of America's pork producers. And when we stepped back here a few years ago and took a look at what we were doing in the form of marketing, promotion, advertising, we recognized that we were operating on a model that was maybe a bit dated. And it was maybe in traditional print magazines, newspapers, dealing with perhaps on some TV ads and things that people remembered. But when you think back when Pork the Other White Meat debuted in the mid-'80s as an advertising tagline, you know, there were three TV stations. You know, maybe four if you adjusted the rabbit ears right and you got public TV, but they didn't have ads on it, right? And your phone was probably bolted to the wall in the kitchen instead of being in your pocket. Hog production was, in many cases, still outside, sometimes often in the dirt, yet pretty rudimentary production systems. And technology on the farm, whether it was in the form of taking care of the animals or how you farmed your corn and soybeans, was still pretty standard. And yet we were using the same model trying to approach delivering the producer's message and the message about pork as a food through a lot of that old model. And so the board stepped back and said, we really need to do a reset. And reset they did.
So they reset and said, let's go to one of the places, and there are, what, three of them, I think, that really can reach the consumer directly. They would be Facebook, Amazon, and Google. And I don't know whether you chose just one, but you talked about Google here.
Yeah, we're actually active with all three organizations. Amazon started out selling books and CDs, and now is, you know, a very dominant retailer, and they moved into the food space. And so we've promoted pork on Amazon through their food business. Facebook, of course, home for a lot of video interactive options. But when you really step back and understand when people are thinking about pork, where do they go? They tend to go to a search engine, and the search engine they go to is Google. And everybody's got a smartphone in their pocket. And so when you ask a question, right, or ask Siri, it's going to be driven to a search engine. And so our traditional approach had been, how do we want to tell people something that's on our mind? Instead, we stepped back and said, what are people asking about us as an industry? What are they asking about pork as a food? What are they asking about how pigs are raised? And instead, we used deep analytics with Google to understand what are people curious about pork. And then we delivered the answers and the messages to them to the questions they're already asking. And so, you know, the old adage is, if it doesn't show up at the top of the search results in 10 seconds, you're in trouble. Pork has repositioned itself to operate in that space. And I'd say the one of the more interesting things is the real shift of video. YouTube is a huge engine now, billions of hours of video online. And, you know, some of it is cute, some of it is silly, but some of it are people on there that are building their online personalities. They're content creators, they're influencers. So we sat down and identified a number of those folks that talked to millions of other Americans, including people around the world, around cooking, around nutrition, around health. And we sat down with them and said, hey, would you like to partner with the Pork Checkoff to tell a good story about pork as a food? And we've had fantastic success in delivering our message through other, you know, citizens like the rest of us listen to this program. It's much more effective than placing an ad in the back page of a newspaper, for example.
Give me an example of what might happen. So if I said, I want to cook a pork loin tonight, and I asked how to do that, what would happen on the back end of Google?
So we've looked at their analytics, and what you do is if you can provide an answer to that that's viewed as a credible source, you move up in the rankings. Now, there's always the opportunity. You can buy the top spot on the page, and that's you pay to get there, and it's labeled as an ad. So we do some of that. In other cases, it's just search engine optimization. How do you get the pork message? You know, one of the number one search issue around pork, or the question asked about pork on Google, is how do I cook a pork chop? And so, well, guess what? The Pork Checkoff better be there to provide that answer, which is 145 degrees, and let it rest for 3 minutes, and you've got a perfectly tasty, delicious, juicy chop. And if everybody knew that, you wouldn't have problems with a dry, you know, eating experience. There's little things that we can do in a smart way to help solve and drive pork demand.
So one of the other things you did, and you showed them here this morning, was an advertising campaign you had put together with Food Lion. Normally a coupon would be spit out at the grocery store. In this case, you showed a video.
Yes, yeah, so a Food Lion, a major grocery retailer on the East Coast, and we sat down with them, and normally we would work on a coupon promotion campaign. Well, they have a kiosk in front of their stores that play short videos, allow you to swipe your loyalty card, and normally it would print out just like a coupon. It kind of looks like an ATM. And instead, we went with Food Lion and said, you know what? What if we went to the root cause around pork repeat purchasing, and that is a good eating experience? We put together a series of videos on how to cook pork, and then the customer swipes their loyalty card, and what's printed out instead was actually a recipe as well as good cooking instructions instead of a coupon. And so we took the producer's dollar, and instead of using it in a, you know, to subsidize the sale of a product, we use it to educate the consumer on how to eat the product and cook it properly. And the results were nothing short of fantastic in increasing sales. And a lot, the important part is repeat purchases.
Yes, so those results really were good. I saw some numbers there that were just unbelievable, 186% increase in sales, I think. I can't remember whether that's right. It's 14.6% in retention of that particular customer. Food Lion didn't think this would work, and it really did.
Yeah, and naturally people are going to be skeptical. When you go to them and say, hey, can we try something different? You know, they have a tried and true method in the grocery industry they know works for them. And so the checkoff is coming in and saying, you know, can we do this smarter? How do we, you know, there's the old saying, the old proverb, that you give a man a fish, he eats for a day. You teach a man a fish, and he'll eat for a lifetime. And so what we're trying to do in this sense is teach a person how to cook pork, and they'll eat for a lifetime. And it's really based around that 145-degree cooking temp.
One more thing that I'd like to have you address. African swine fever, we on the Closing Market Report have talked about a great deal as it relates to China, some as it relates to Europe, where really it
started to come out of to begin with. Of course, it came out of Africa, but transferred into into Eastern Europe in particular, and China has had a problem. We talk about it as it relates to the number of hogs that are produced there and how much grain and oil seeds we can, are exported out of the United States to feed those animals. However, it is a problem that you're facing here in the United States, looking to say what happens if African swine fever crosses the national borders.
So the important thing for any of your listeners to know is that African swine fever does not affect people, and it doesn't affect pork that you eat. Neither does it affect your dogs and cats or your pets around the house. So that's important that your listeners understand that. So when you set that aside, one of the jobs the checkoff and the rest of the pork industry has is how do we take care of our pigs and make sure that they are healthy? And that's a duty we take very seriously in the pork industry. And so the checkoff, the National Pork Producers Council, American Association of Swine Veterinarians, the Swine Health Information Center, the USDA, you know, alphabet soup of groups have been working diligently since African swine fever was found in China back in August to really put together a plan of how do we keep it out of the country? What measures does our government need to do around the borders or people coming in from, back from vacation? And then number two, what do we need to do about biosecurity at the farm level, making sure that you really know, you know, who's going in and out of your barns, where is your feed coming from? It's just part and parcel of understanding how do you take care of your animals and keep them healthy. We've been driving a lot of information out there on various websites. SecurePork.org or SecurePork.org is an important one. And that's really a go-to place for producers to understand, all right, is my biosecurity up to snuff, and what do I need to do to improve it?
What kinds of things can the producers do?
The number one thing you need to do is make sure you've got a premise ID. Your state veterinarian is really going to be reliant on you having a premise ID. And it's important to know that there's a premise ID for all of your barns, and that you have the ability to keep records and get them quickly into the state vet should there be a need. It's important to note the records belong to the producer. It's up to them to share them with the state vet if there's a problem. But the pork checkoff is working on building a system to make sure that that can happen seamlessly in the event of an emergency.
Before I let you go, you talked about one other item that is pork producer specific as it relates to the organization and how it's constructed. You're now just in the beginning of the throes of thinking about what the pork checkoff looks like and how the organization is constructed across the United States. What's happening and why?
So we step back as the board of directors at the checkoff, our 15 producer directors, and they said, you know what, this industry is really going through a period of dramatic change. We're having major disruption in the food chain. There's new technology that's disrupting everything from blockchain to artificial intelligence to gene editing to alternative proteins. News travels around the world in the blink of an eye in a split second now on a smartphone digitally. The board said we really need to step back and say, how do we need to structure our organization to make sure that we can react in real time with what producers' needs are? And I guess the vision that's coming out of this is how do you create an agile organization? How do you create an agile organization? And that's really what the board of directors is looking at now. They've got a blue ribbon panel of 20 producers and folks from around the industry. They're going to spend the next 6 months taking a deep look at this and then coming forth with recommendations on how to restructure the checkoff to make sure it's relevant for the next decade.
Bill, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Bill Even is the Chief Executive Officer for the National Pork Board. I'm here at the Pork Expo in Springfield.
It's National Corn Chip Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1817, William Farrell was born. An American meteorologist, he contributed significantly to the understanding of oceanic and atmospheric circulation. Farrell was the first to mathematically demonstrate the influence of the planet's rotation on the presence of high and low pressure belts circling the Earth. In 1878, the first patent for a glass milk container was issued to George Lester. In 1924, Carl R. Taylor of Cleveland patented the first U.S. ice cream cone rolling machine. In 1927, Louis Urey was born. A Canadian-American chemical engineer, he invented alkaline batteries, which now account for about 80% of all dry cell batteries sold in the world. Urey's prototype alkaline battery is on display at the Smithsonian Institution. And in 1934, Fritz Haber died, a German physical chemist. His development of a method of synthesizing ammonia led to the commercial large-scale production of nitrogen fertilizer. And that's this day in agricultural history.
On this Tuesday afternoon, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason at the Pork Expo in Springfield today. Don Day is with us now. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Cold here today. Looks like tomorrow and Thursday are going to be a lot tougher. And I think, Don, and you can help me out with how this is coming in. Things are a lot colder out west, and it's floating into our area. What do you see?
Yeah, the cold air that's making the headlines is actually coming right to the area near the Arctic Circle northwest of Hudson Bay, and it's traveling south very quickly and is really going to be making its presence felt overnight tonight into Wednesday and Thursday. That's when the coldest of the cold air comes on in and brings these record cold temperatures and wind chills to the upper Midwest and Great Lakes and northern Corn Belt region. The good news, if there is such thing as good news with this polar outbreak, is that it is not going to hang around for a long time. Temperatures starting Friday and into the weekend will moderate as the vortex of cold air spins its way east-northeast and moves into southeastern Canada, northern New England, bringing those folks the cold, but allowing a more moderate weather mass, air mass coming in from the Pacific to give some moderation in temperatures. So if we can get through the next 60 to 72 hours, there is relief on the way.
Relief will be welcomed. I was chatting with my daughter just a few minutes ago. She's in Fargo, North Dakota. 20 below the actual air temperature there now. I think wind chill is 52 below. We won't quite get that cold, but, well, maybe overnight on Wednesday night. What are temperatures looking like in my part of the world here near Champaign?
Okay, yeah, and the thing to remember, there's going to be a really big north-south gradient. So if you're listening north of Champaign, you're going to be a whole lot colder as opposed to south. So if we were to go to the southern parts of Illinois, you're looking at temperatures around zero, going 5 to 10 below zero. Northern Illinois temperatures could be 25 below zero in some of those northern areas. So there's going to be a really big contrast north to south. Hopefully you're listening south of Champaign.
And tomorrow will be the coldest day for low temperatures, correct?
That is correct. As we get into tonight, it's going to be up in those Minnesota, Wisconsin, Dakota areas and Iowa. And then tomorrow night, it's going to be in our neck of the woods. And then as we get on into the following night, still extremely cold. But the worst of the worst is going to be happening over the next 48 hours.
Yeah, and then things begin to warm up. Do we have a pretty good warming trend coming, too?
It is a warming trend. And really, in the winter, it's all relative, you know, to where you've been lately. So it is going to feel a whole lot warmer this weekend into early next week. Relative to averages, they're just getting closer to normal, Todd, is what we're seeing. And what we're going to see heading into February is a continuation of an active winter pattern across the lower 48 states. Do we see anything as severe as what we're going to be experiencing over the next couple of days? We don't. But at the same time, we see the tendency in February is for below average temperatures across most of the lower 48 states. So the heart of winter is this is where we're at.
Hey, thanks so much, Don. We'll talk with you again in a week.
Sounds good.
Don Day is with Day Weather. He's out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Visit our website, willag.org. You can buy your tickets for the All Day Ag Outlook there. That's coming up on the Tuesday, the first one in the month of March on the fifth day at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. The cost is just $30. Tickets available at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.